Nation with Who1.co.uk presents the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Anyway, hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast number 118, and I'm recording this show on the go in the CARDIS with Miss Alicia Pearson. Yeah, I said the microphone was quite close between us, but it's not going to pick you up turning your head away from it. It's only an iPhone mic. So, Alicia, now, you haven't been particularly well.
No.
And there's been a lot of concern from listeners of the show as to this ailment of yours, and a lot of good wishes and well-wishing and stuff like that.
I don't know now, but I have to go to school.
So, explain. You've been in bed, you've not been eating for most of last week.
Yes.
And worst of all, you haven't been watching any Doctor Who whatsoever.
I haven't watched any Doctor Who for the past 3 months.
And why is this then? Because
I don't like it.
Okay? Because I don't like it. But anyway, so, and it's only on Saturday you stopped being sick.
Yes.
So you haven't really eaten much in that time. You're feeling a bit giddy.
Yes.
People say you're a bit of a giddy teenager anyway. And you woke up this morning being a bit dizzy, but decided halfway through the day, just when I'm supposed to be recording the podcast, to actually go into school.
I have to, because I've got GCSE, well, they're mock exams, but if I don't do well on my mocks, then it's like I won't get into good sets for my GCSE. And I won't, do well, and you get what I mean. The mocks are important as well as the GCSE.
So, what about the exams you were supposed to do last week? Apparently, there was exams that you were supposed to do last week.
Well, that exam, well, I should have it today. But I can just explain, saying, yeah, I feel a bit giddy. I can't do it today.
Yes,
and
well,
I talk really quietly, so then she think, oh, yeah, she can't do it today. Oh, bless her.
Right. So in other words, you're being a bit silly.
Not really.
You haven't got a coat, have you?
Coat?
You haven't got a coat with you.
You haven't got a coat with you.
No, you haven't got a coat with you. A coat, you know, a jacket.
Yeah, this sort of blazer.
Yeah, but if it's raining,
it goes over your head.
It goes over your head.
Blazers do amazing things.
Right then, so, right, Doctor Who. Have you heard any of the prevailing gossip and news that has been going around?
I was watching this morning when I was ill.
Yes.
This actor was on there.
An actor?
I don't know. I forgot his name. You don't expect me to remember. He's in this big movie coming up, and he said, Vince Scofield said, yeah, you got a role in Doctor Who. You can't say much, can you? He goes, no, I'm just telling you I'm a main role. I'm Professor in it.
But you don't know who the actor was, what film he was in.
No.
Doesn't really help.
Oh, I think I remember what day it was on, though.
Well, that doesn't help either.
It was on a Wednesday, so you can go back on iPlayer.
No, iPlayer's a BBC
thing. Yeah,
yeah, and also, the noise from outside is getting in.
I'm ill.
You shouldn't be going to school, then.
I need to study for Jesus English, okay? Yeah.
Well, the fact that you mentioned this does ring a bell, but I can't remember what particular bell it rings in relation to this chap you're talking about, who's in a film that's also in Doctor Who in the main role.
Yeah.
It does ring a bell. I think I've heard something on that line, but I still can't remember who it was.
It's not an actor.
Might have to see if Kirby can work out. You say it's not an actor?
Some actor.
Oh, it is an actor.
Well, he's British.
He's British. Well, that narrows it down a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, anything else apart from that? Have you seen any of the pictures of the new costume?
No.
Why
would I?
Because you take quite
I haven't been on my phone in the past week.
And the battery should be fine. You were moaning about battery earlier on. Hello? You still there?
Yeah.
There you are. What's he doing?
Need to wash shoelaces, but no one of us is gone.
You know, thanks to you, I won't actually get you lunch today.
Oh, that's lovely.
Well, as soon as I get home, I've got to try and record the podcast, so I won't get anything to eat.
Well, it's not my fault.
It is.
I won't be able to get any lunch today either, because break time,
yeah,
I have to run around and find my English teacher. Lunchtime, I'll probably be doing an English lesson, and then I have to go and probably go and study for my speech, and then that's it.
Okay.
And all the rest of the time, I try to talk to my friends. Why try to work for my GCSEs? Do you know how life, how stressful my life is right now? You've got it easy, okay?
Well, you haven't actually, sort of lost that ability of yours to completely change the subject away from Doctor Who, have you? It's incredible. I was filming a wedding
but
at the week.
But is it possible
yes?
That when you're ill, your ankles go smaller and your feet go smaller?
I've no idea.
Because these shoes are too big for me.
Oh well, can I continue with what I was trying to say?
Yeah.
Yes, I went to a wedding, well, two weddings on Saturday. And one of the weddings...
Two weddings?
Yeah. One in East Cowes. What's that noise?
Popping. Carry on. No.
Where is it?
I don't know. But, so you did one wedding, the Enchanted one. The Enchanted...
Yeah, I did one at, in Binstead, where I picked up that fir cone for Isabella. Very nice fir cone it was too.
A what?
A fir cone. That thing didn't... Isabella show you the fir cone. And then, left that one to film a wedding at the Enchanted Manor with
so you didn't film all of it?
Fellow carnival princess Antonia.
Oh, so you did film all of that one.
Anyway, I just finished filming the speeches.
Oh, that reminds me. Talk about carnival. I still need to get Molly a present because I feel bad, so I'm still going to get her a lovely present because I didn't get to go.
All
right. It's
a nice person. Can I continue? I just finished filming the speeches, and imagine what it would have been like if this had actually happened during the speeches, when my phone rang. And it was obviously my ringtone, which is the Doctor Who theme tune ringtone. And, of course, I was padding around the pocket trying to get my phone out, and this woman walked past and said, "Oh, is that your phone? That's my ringtone too. Brilliant ringtone." In the meantime, I took the phone call, and it was James Luter asking about whether you were going to Molly's party or not. And then I thought, who was it? Who was it? It came up to me, and I was looking around, and I saw this lady. I went up to her and said, "Was it you that came up to me and asked about the ringtone?" And she said, "Yes." And then I got into a conversation about it. She turns out she's a massive Doctor Who fan. She's a woman, a very pretty woman at that. She's called Lottie. Massive Doctor Who fan, lives on the Isle of Wight.
We should get her on the show.
Correct. I wanted you to say that and not me to say it because I thought if I said it, you'd say, "You tried to kick me off the show."
No, 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 for one time.
For one time.
Yeah, and I mean one time.
Well, I did ask her, but...
No.
I did.
How old is she?
She's in her 20s.
What's she do?
I don't know.
What's her occupation?
I don't know. We were just talking about Doctor Who.
No, no, no. What's her occupation?
I answered that question a few
times. Well, if you've got her on Facebook, you find out what occupation is.
I have got her on Facebook, yes.
Find out what her occupation is.
Anyway.
No, because if she's like, something I'm interested in, then maybe she can come on the show. Because then we can talk, but you not talk about Doctor Who.
Yeah, but at least you hardly ever come on the show.
No, because then she can talk to me, and also she can talk about Doctor Who. It'd be perfect.
I reiterate, you hardly ever come on the show, so if she did come on the show, it's very unlikely that you and her...
She's a teacher.
She's not a teacher. It's very unlikely
that
you and her would actually end up talking to each other. The other thing, of course, that was quite interesting, that she's a big Volkswagen Beetle fan. And,
I like her.
And what did I once have? In fact, what did I have when you were born?
A Volkswagen Beetle.
Yeah, so you came home from hospital in a Volkswagen Beetle.
Until Mum broke it.
No, after Mum broke it, we still carried on to use it. It got fixed.
Ah.
Yes, it just became too expensive to run. But anyway, yeah, so this...
Why didn't we get, like, one of the new Volkswagen Beetles?
Because I got travel sick in one just as a passenger, and I thought if I'm going to get travel sick in it, then Isabella will be vomiting non-stop. She gets travel sick.
I didn't really get travel sick in one.
Yes. Digression again. Digression alert. Digression.
Can
I can't speak.
Up,
alert.
You're digressing.
No, you're dog. Anyway. So yes. So Lottie, I did ask her. I said we need a regular female.
No.
What?
Don't say regular.
Not an additional. An additional regular female.
No.
What?
Don't say additional or regular.
Why?
One show.
Why only one show?
No, no.
Are you being sexist by any chance?
No. I just want to be the only female. No, one show.
No, I think you're being sexist.
One show.
Shall I tell you why I think you're being sexist?
One show.
Because you haven't grumbled about Kirby being on the show. You haven't grumbled about Reese being on the show. Yeah, exactly. And to balance things out, it would be handy to have
another.
We've got two men.
No.
2 women, that would make it balance it out a bit, wouldn't it?
No, it wouldn't, because I'll get lost.
What do you mean you'll get lost?
I'll get lost.
What?
No one will hear me.
Yeah, they will, they can't speak. They'll hear you when you are on the show, won't they? Hello?
No.
Are you there?
No.
Don't talk nonsense, Alicia. You're just being sexist.
Hiya.
You're just... Hey?
Hiya.
Yeah, I'm just saying. So that I did actually ask her to listen to the show and consider coming on. Surprise, surprise, heard nothing. So I would imagine that she probably won't come on. Maybe she might listen to this show then. So, hello, Lottie. Nice to meet you and hope you come on the show at some point.
Yes.
And if she does listen, then becomes as another additional Isle of Wight listener. It's quite ironic, actually, Alicia. We've got more listeners in Alabama than we have on the Isle of Wight.
Where's Alabama?
Alabama is in America. That's where Kirby went to that convention last week.
There's a song about it.
I told you about this. He met at least 5 listeners to the show.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, well, listen then. What?
There's a song about Alabama.
Yes, there is a song about Sweet Home Alabama, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, so that's what we've been trying to do this last week. I put an appeal out on Twitter for an additional female.
No, we're going to have to slow down.
Why?
No, it's not even break time yet. No,
we'll just have to
slow down. Well,
it's good then. Look, they're Skyvers.
The 11th.
Right. And they're allowed to Skyve then, huh?
Yeah.
But yes, so that's what we've been attempting to do. I did get a little bit of joy in that front. Somebody said that they knew somebody in Montreal that might be interested in becoming a regular feature on the show, but he went away on a camping trip, and that's as far as it went. So, if you're a woman and you're interested in Doctor Who and you don't mind Skyping, etc., etc., and you can put up with Alicia from time to time, and Ben, because Ben probably on the show about the same amount of times as you are now. Then please let me know at 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. Right then, so, soon apparently, Alicia, the rumours are that Doctor Who is going to return at the end of August, beginning of September. Hello?
Yeah.
You still there?
Yeah.
So that means that we'll have 6 episodes, then there'll be a gap, then there'll be the Christmas special, and then the rest of the episodes in the new year.
Why do you look at me like that?
Because they're tough and they think...
No,
what?
There's
he looks way tough with his cigarette, doesn't he?
No.
So, yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it, if we've only got a couple of months to wait to the new series. Hello, you still there?
Yeah, pick me up from school.
Oh, God, look at the state. Is that blocked out? Am I supposed to get in?
Like,
why is that bloke wearing an orange doodah?
Well,
it's for the Isle of Wight Festival. Mm-hmm. Oh, for goodness sake, why the hell are you...
The Severdina College student.
What do I do is point to you. That's the ticket. Point to the teenager. And you are let in.
They don't. Look, they are setting up. What's
mum
talking about?
I don't know. She's trying to sell her Isle of Wight Festival ticket.
Look, what's that then?
That's a tent.
It's big top.
Okay, right, I'm going to drop you off now. It's 5 minutes
please,
for break.
No,
yes,
I don't,
yes,
no,
yes. I want to get back to do my show.
Oh, I don't, I mean, oh, I don't.
Please,
oh,
I want to get back. Please, I've done you a favour.
Okay,
now you do me
okay,
one.
Please
and
pick
say
me
good,
up.
Don't forget, say please. Goodbye to my listeners.
Bye. Can you please pick me up?
I'll try to.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Text me where you are, okay?
Where? Oh, bye.
That's like you can pick me up.
Yeah, okay. Bye.
Hi, this is Fraser Hines, and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello. Right, now I should be right.
Hello.
Hello. Right, shut that door. Right. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, thank God for that. Any echo?
Slightly.
I'll try and talk quieter.
Not too bad.
Oh, good, right. Yeah, so, hello, Kirby.
Good morning.
Yeah, there's going to be
whatever it is, wherever anyone is.
There's going to be a bit of a delay because I'm on my iPhone in the kitchen via the Wi-Fi, and the dog's just opened the door. Get in! Sorry, one of the dogs decided they'd open the door that I shut to prevent the echoing situation. Right, now I've got the kettle on. So I should be... Oh, where's my mug? Right, so how's it been going then, Kirby, this week?
All right. I got a disappearing TARDIS mug for Father's Day.
Oh, you lucky so-and-so.
Which was very nice of the girls, and they thought about naming my adipose, and they named it Charles for some reason.
Random.
So I've got a picture of Charles posing with the disappearing TARDIS mug on my Facebook page.
Right.
And on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast page.
Yeah, I did see. I didn't see any posing photos. I did see Charles on there. And still nice to see that it's actually in your possession still at the moment.
Yes.
Well, I obviously... That's
Crash.
The postman.
Hey.
That's the postman.
Yes.
Yeah, postwoman, sorry. Well, it's Father's Day this week, obviously. Did receive a Doctor Who item during Father's Day, which I was quite pleased to get, especially as I got it the day before its release. And that is a Death to the Daleks DVD. Released today, got it yesterday. I do like it when that happens.
Yeah.
Play.com, thank you very much for sending me that a day early, so I actually got it on Father's Day. I haven't watched it yet, still in its wrapper, but I've heard good things about it via the Siobhan Galashon and Dave Keep link, or was it Siobhan and Elizabeth? I can't remember now, but via the DWO WhoCast. And so I'm looking forward to watching the extras on that, because I don't expect I'll probably watch the actual story itself until we end up reviewing it, probably in a couple of years' time, the way things are going on. Because I was starting to put a schedule together in relation to how we're going to do our episodes, and it's quite clear that we're not going to be anywhere near finishing the new era of Doctor Who before the new series starts.
Right. I said that months ago.
I know you did. And there's no way around it. Even doing two episodes a week, we're still not going to do it, so we might as well just stick to our one story a week, I should say. And
yes.
Just stop when the new series starts. We'll stop, talk about the new series, and then resume the series probably in the new year or after the, you know, the series breaks up or whatever you call it. So that's what we're going to do.
Sounds fine to me.
And as I was talking to Alicia earlier on, it sounds like there's a possibility the new series might start at the beginning of September. Have you heard that one?
Yeah. I actually thought it was going to be possibly towards the end of September, but
did you?
There's going to be that. It should be about a week after that special showing. And I forget that was announced. About a month ago, that there was going to be a special showing in a theater.
Yeah.
And when they've done that sort of thing, it's usually been a week later. I don't know if I can Google all of the info quickly enough, though.
Now, you know, you're quite clued up on things. Earlier on, Alicia was saying that there was an actor who's going to be in a film, appeared on a chat show. Which chat show was it now? I think it was this morning. Said that he was going to be in Doctor Who, but that was all that he could say, but he was going to be one of the main characters in it. Have you heard anything about?
No.
Well, possibly.
Hang on. Let me search for some stuff.
Okay.
So we're doing news right now?
Yeah, why not? Let's do news right now.
Okay. Well, we do have some other bits of news, including... word that, let's see, where is it? Okay, here it is. Doctor Who theme plays at Olympic opening ceremony.
Really?
According to reports in British newspapers, the Doctor Who theme will be one of four television themes played as part of the Olympic opening ceremony.
Is David Tennant going to carry the torch around the stadium?
Who knows? But they will be playing four iconic themes. The BBC News theme from 1954.
Right.
Coronation Street theme. Seuss's Liberty Bell March.
Right.
And the Doctor Who theme.
Hey! That'll be good. That'll be worth the Americans watching the opening ceremony for.
Yes.
Have you heard what the theme of the opening ceremony is going to be?
No.
I think it's the Green and Pleasant Land, I think.
Okay.
So, which is quite ironic considering what the Olympic Village is built on.
You'll have to clue me in because I have no idea.
It's basically a wasteland. It's where there used to be a Greyhound stadium there, I think, at one point. It was just a bit of wasteland. They did it up and turned it into the Olympic Village. That's all I'm going to talk about on the Olympics at the moment. But at least we can say the Olympics are topical in relation to Doctor Who. So we can always have we can always mention it somewhere along the line. But I'm not going to mention it any further in this episode of the show.
Now, some other some rumors.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's exactly a rumor or how reliable is the Daily Star?
About as reliable as the sun.
Okay.
I mean, not the sun, the star that beams down on us, if you're lucky, all the time. A sun newspaper, sorry, yes.
There are stories out there saying that the Ice Warriors are returning.
Yeah, I've seen that story. Excuse my mouthful, but yes, I've seen that story. Elaborate.
I'll open up the dailystar.co.uk article.
And yeah, I did read that one. On my tea break the other day.
And my internet connection seems a bit slow this morning.
Oh dear, don't break up.
All these articles always have pictures of one of those new pictures with Jenna Louise Coleman on set, because apparently that's all that they're ever releasing for us. It says it will be a Mark Gatiss story, and the source said Who fans have been crying out for the return of the Ice Warriors. Now they've got their wish. It's going to be an exciting year with the 50th anniversary celebration.
Yeah.
And that's all it says.
Okay.
Let me see what else I've got. The episode 4 has some more things with it. That's the episode called Cubed, which I believe is the episode that the pods are leaving in.
Hang on a sec. You just mentioned an episode title, and I haven't heard anything on episode titles. Is that the only one that's been actually been named, Cubed?
No, there's another one that's been named. I'll find out for you in a minute as well.
Spoilers, listener, but who cares?
Details about filming episode 4 have emerged. This is the unit story for the season.
Oh, excellent.
Arthur Darvill was on set for some pickup scenes last week outside the Pond's house with Matt Smith working on the roof of the TARDIS. I'm sure you've seen the pictures of him up on the roof playing around with the lamp.
No, I haven't seen those pictures at all.
There's an Ood in this story. Now, this is all rumors.
Yes.
And
so, not necessarily spoilers. Well, you can say rumors. That's not a spoiler, isn't it?
Right, and this source, this is Anglotopia.net, by the way, which is, I believe this is run by BBC America, this website. So it may be fairly reliable. Says the Brigadier's daughter is now in unit.
Oh, cool.
Had it been mentioned back in, say, Battlefield that he had a daughter? I believe so.
I don't know.
Been a while since Battlefield, and that there was quite a bit about the Brigadier's family in that story. I loved Battlefield.
There were slight mentions, weren't there? But I can't remember specifically a mention of a daughter.
We ought to do Battlefield when we get around to doing some of those. I like that one.
So do I. I thought we'd already done it, actually.
I might have. How am I supposed to remember these things that 5:36 in the morning?
Well, you seem to be able to remember doing Fear Her when you weren't actually on that particular review, which was quite amusing.
I was.
Weren't on the review. You were on the episode.
We talked about it.
Briefly, yeah. And then me and Ben did the actual hard work of having to watch the episode, yeah. What else have we got?
Another
episode title, yeah.
I will wait until you've done with your.
Yeah, I'm just digging out a packet of What's It. Carry
on. What's it?
What's it? Or as Mary Lang called them, cheesy puffs or something like that.
Yeah, cheesy puffs or cheese curls. Neil Cross is writing a story.
Who?
I'm not sure who. Neil Cross.
Never heard of him.
I haven't either. It's called The Hider in the House. It will be the 11th story and has a Victorian theme.
Oh, okay. Well, the BBC are good at doing that sort of period stuff, aren't they?
Mike Southon is a cinematographer for the story. He's directed over 250 music videos and is a former head of the British Society of Cinematographers. So there's a lot of information. Guest star Dougray Scott is playing a professor in the new season.
Mm, you mean Dougray Scott?
Okay.
You know what he was in?
No.
He was in, I think, series 4 of Desperate Housewives. He played Susan's love interest. And bearing in mind he's Scottish, did one of the worst English accents I've ever heard.
I've never seen that. I've never seen that show, so I wouldn't know.
He based his English accent on Prince Charles. Well, that's the impression I got anyway. Yeah, Dougray Scott, yeah. He's a seasoned thespian. And, yes, he was in. A lot of listeners will watch Desperate House. Yeah, but because he's Scottish, Dougray Scott. I hide a new stitches, pal.
Yeah. There's some more information from Stephen Moffat, finally, about the new character, the new companion. He has not admitted the Clara name yet, but he spoke to BBC Radio 5 and says that all will be revealed soon. Says that she will be a human from contemporary Earth. She's not an alien like and he said the next companion was going to be an alien. Moffat lies.
Yeah.
The new companion will not have any links to any previous characters. Her journey will be shocking and intriguing. The Doctor has never met anyone quite like her before. Her very presence in the TARDIS will change the Doctor, and there's something different about her that will have a knock-on effect for the Doctor-Companion dynamic.
The thing is, though, it's all very, it's a nice idea to have an alien companion, but as human beings, how are we supposed to relate? Because basically the companion is us, isn't it? And basically when you see the companion in Doctor Who, you're thinking of yourself and what you'd like to do. You'd like to be the companion. So for me, it's difficult when they have a alien companion, but that's just
my
view.
They can always go the Star Trek route and just stick little pieces of prosthetics, make their noses different sizes and have them act human.
Yeah.
That's a standard thing.
John
Barrowman will be a guest at DragonCon.
Yeah.
Which is over Labor Day weekend at the end of summer here in Atlanta. August 31st to September 3rd. It costs me way too much to go, so I've never been.
Well, that stops you from asking this next question. Were you going to go to Dragon Con? Never mind.
I just cannot afford it.
No. And you and listeners who want to give Kirby some money so he can go to that convention, please feel free.
Is this a picture of David Tennant on Radio Times?
Is that? Oh, yes. True Love, isn't it? That's a drama that he and Billy Piper have done.
Yes.
I recorded it last night. I haven't watched it yet. It looks like it's going to be quite soppy. It's more Deb sort of thing than mine. Now, I'm going to end the phone call because I'm just about to walk through to the other room where the studio basically. So bear with me a few seconds and I'll be sounding a bit more normal. I'm surprised this connection's actually stayed put. So I was quite pleased actually. So see you in a few seconds.
Okay.
This is high tech. Right, just need to put me headphones on, and hopefully, if I've got my tech right, I should be able to hear you.
Yes, I hope so.
I can hear you.
Oh, no.
My microphone cable's not long, I think. Hey, do I sound better now?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, good, right. Where did we get up to? So we got up to True Love with David Tennant and
Billy Piper and a few other people. As I say, haven't seen it yet. I think it first went out last night. Any more news?
That's all. Well, let me check a couple other places. Actress Jean Marsh has been awarded an OBE.
Oh, yes.
She, of course, has been in the show three times.
Yeah.
With the first Doctor twice, and then with the seventh Doctor.
Seventh Doctor?
Oh, she was...
Battlefield.
Which we were just talking about. Yeah, I didn't realize she was had been married to John Pertwee.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was common knowledge. Obviously not.
And you still need to dig out that videotape that you had John Pertwee sign.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, I don't quite know where it is. I think it might be on my shelf amongst all my figures. Yeah, if I find it, I'll immediately take a picture of it and post it on Facebook.
I showed the girls that your video over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
They were unimpressed, sorry. they found it boring. I loved it.
There's no accounting for taste. Excuse my mouthful. I've got a Cadbury's, what's left of a Cadbury's fruit and nut in my mouth.
I also tried showing them the Mikado, one of my DVDs of the Mikado, and I had to turn it off after the first song. They were completely unimpressed. They don't understand the genius of Gilbert and Sullivan.
Much the same as I don't understand the genius of William Shakespeare.
What?
Can't get around my head around the dialogue.
I presume that you've only read the plays, you've never seen one performed.
I've seen one performed by the children of Solent Middle School, and Alicia was in that particular performance. I think it was Midsummer Night's Dream, or was it Romeo and Juliet? Do you know? I don't know.
And how old was she? How old was the kid performing it? Because I can't imagine that could go well with school children.
10 and 11. And to be fair, they were very good.
See, to me, I had issues with understanding Shakespeare for a while until I saw, what was it? It's one of the comedies I saw performed in the proper setting. It was a globe type theater. The roof was not open, but no curtain. No, it was just the stage projecting out into the middle of the audience. And it was perfect. I understood what was going on, and it finally clicked into place.
Well, I must admit, I haven't seen it in that way, and I've seen bits and pieces of the films that, like, Kenneth Branagh's done, and Alicia's watched Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio and stuff like that. I understand basically the story, but I do get a bit not confused, but bored by the dialogue, you know, the way they speak in it. It takes my mind off the plot, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does make sense, but you should try it again.
I'll probably will do it at some point. Can't say never.
And my favorite happens to be the Scottish play, which is what is being referenced most prominently in this and Love's Labor Lost, but the fact that we have the witches.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. So that always reminds me of Blackadder when you say the Scottish play.
But that was what I was referencing.
Yes. Brilliant stuff. Right, so, is there any more news?
That's all I can find right now. I can't find anything about... Unless you were talking about the guy I mispronounced his name.
Do Gray Scott.
Could he have been who you were talking about?
Quite possibly, you never know. I wouldn't be surprised.
Let's see, what else have we got here? Well, But you said film actor, and he's
He's a film actor.
Okay.
Yeah. He's been in stuff.
There's doing some stuff in Australia still with the new K9 TV series. I've only seen 2 episodes of that.
I've seen about 2 episodes of it myself, and like K9 and the voice acting of John Leeson, but everything else about it is bloody awful.
Okay, but that's about it as far as the news that I can find.
Okay.
Let me look up this Dougray Scott guy on Wikipedia.
Well, while you're doing that, shall I do the audio feedback? Because we have some.
Certainly.
Okay, I'll do that then. You won't be surprised as to who the first bit of audio feedback is from.
I've already read it.
Have you?
Yes.
Have you done that then?
Well, if it's one of our regular people gave me an advanced copy.
Oh, there you go.
Hello, 20 Mac Podcast. This is
there we go.
The Shakespeare Code by Gareth Roberts. The Doctor has a replacement for Rose, and she is just as smitten with him as she was, although he has not noticed. Many others have mentioned the similarity between Martha and Rose. 4 years before this episode is set, Shakespeare had already written, "What's in a name? That which we call a rose, by any other name, will smell as sweet." There are a couple of pieces of British vocabulary that viewers in the former colonies might miss. Martha says she has worked late night shift A&E. This is the accident and emergency department.
Yes.
Speaking of which, I hope Robert Haynes is well enough to be on the podcast this week.
He isn't, but he should be soon.
For the Americans, A&E is the emergency room, as in ER with Alex Kingston.
Ah.
In Britain, ER means Queen Elizabeth, which brings us back to the Shakespeare Code. Martha says if she tells people she has met Shakespeare, she will be sectioned. She means 2 doctors may order a person to be detained for up to 72 hours under Section 4 of the Mental Health Act in 1983. Karen Gillan might be making a romantic comedy about an author struggling to write her second novel. This week on the BBC there is a series of 5 plays called True Love. One of them stars David Morrissey, who was in The Next Doctor. There is also Billy Piper and David Tennant. I am delighted this podcast has been heard in Huntsville, Alabama, where they had a Saturn V rocket as a lawn ornament. I thought they didn't know me from Adam. Perhaps they don't. Bye for now.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Kirk. Yes,
I had was going to object to the business about the that he had there about the Saturn V as a lawn ornament. Well, sort of, because I was thinking he was referring to at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center, they have a Saturn I rocket, which they've had there for a long time, which is sitting upright as if it's about to take off.
Yeah.
And that, yes, they have a Saturn V, one of 3 Saturn V's which are on display in the U.S. One of them's at the Kennedy Space Center, one of them's in Huntsville, one of them's in Houston.
Okay.
But those are all laid out on their side. And 2 of them, the one in Houston and the one in Huntsville, have been rusting, and they're working on ways of protecting them from the weather. The one at Kennedy Space Center is inside a building and is hung from the ceiling. It's just fascinating to walk along it. But then I discovered, one of the things I did last weekend, a week ago, was I drove around the parking lot of the shopping mall where the convention was held at a hotel sort of connected to a shopping mall. And as I drove around, I could see a rocket on the horizon.
Yes.
And I was thinking that that was the Saturn I. Because when I was young, I visited the Space and Rocket Center, but I haven't been back in quite a number of years.
Yeah.
Turns out that in 1999, they built a full-sized replica of a Saturn V and stuck it close by to the Saturn I. So there really is an upright Saturn V there. So Ian Kirk is off the hook.
Have a listen to this. This is a follow-up email that Ian wrote. He said, I said that the Doctor mentioned parallels between Shakespeare's time and ours. I meant to say that when Martha says she might be sectioned if she told people she had met Shakespeare, and the two actors say they might be sent to Bedlam if they told people they had seen a floating apparition, that's right. That is almost the same thing. I have sent Kirby a copy of my script for the latest feedback, and we are having a pedant fest. Oh, excellent.
It was over what we just talked about there.
Discussing the identity and present whereabouts of the Saturn V rocket.
Correct.
I've got the cursor over the word. Which was previously on a lawn at the Manned Space Flight Center in Alabama. So there you go then.
There is still one on a lawn. The one that's upright is a replica.
Ah.
So they've got a fake one, which is upright, and they have the real one, which is laid out on a lawn.
Yeah.
Rusting.
Okay. Right. There's more feedback. Let's see if I can get this one up and running. Who's it from? Oh. Here it is. I haven't heard this one yet, so it'd be quite interesting. It's just arrived as we speak. So you'll know who it's from if I say that.
Okay.
Sorry, my phone's thinking about playing it. It's going to play it. It's playing it.
This is the Galactic Exchange. Your normal operator can't be with you today. So you have me instead. Now, let's see, what do I press? That doesn't sound right. That's not right either. That's more like it. You have a message. Connecting you now.
What? Overslept, again? Watching my alien quadrilogy, late into the night, is not a good idea. It's giving me nightmares. Ah, Natasha. You are going to record your thoughts on the Shakespeare Code for the audio feedback.
I just have to finish writing my blog. I'm reviewing this pizza I had at school today.
Careful.
Oops.
You've dropped that pizza into the cybernetic analyzer.
Analyzing pizza.
Cyberben. Stop.
My assessment of this pizza is 2 marks out of 10 to the power 10,000.
I order you to stop this analysis, now.
The dinner droids will reduce to 50 fired immediately.
I pulled the plug on Cyberben.
Good work, but what's this?
Hey, it looks like a ship from my school. I wonder why they're pointing a fully armed zap cannon at us.
Well, it looks like the Intergalactic Space Council subdivision of Argyle and Butte have taken exception to us reviewing their school dinners, so we'll have to leave the Shakespeare Code analysis to you. This is Jim the Fish, Natasha, and Cyber Ben, signing out.
Bye.
Excuse me.
Your message has ended. Have a nice day.
Thank you, Jim the Fish. And apologies for the interruption that Mr. M's Facebook notification did in the middle of that particular bit of feedback.
Yes, I got that too.
You got to do that exactly the same time.
You know, there was a food blogger who was this child in Britain who was blogging about her school lunches, and she was shut down by the school.
Yeah. lunch.
That kind of reminded me of that.
Oh God! And one of the dogs wants to come in. I'll be back in a sec. Otherwise, I'll get told off by the neighbors.
Yes, here it is. UK child food blogger shut down. 9-year-old Martha, her blog catapulted to the internet fame after she started posting pictures of the lunches in her school's cafeteria in Britain a few months ago. She raised over $3,000, this is a U.S. website, for a food charity, and caught the attention of celebrity chef Jamie Oliver for her frank appraisals of her not-so-appetizing school lunch choices on her blog, Never Second. all that's over now. Local authorities told Martha to stop taking pictures of the food and posting it for all the world to see.
Superb. By the way, all that Mr. M was saying, that he was sending feedback,
His
email's not working. Typical, isn't it? But in the process of getting that particular notification, another email popped into the box. This is really interesting, isn't it? Getting live emails, and I just opened up the wrong email account. It's Mr. Roy Spearman. Hello, Roy. Sorry it's late. Been busy doing battle with the Boots.com photo printing website. Anyway, just watched the new Primeval episode on ITV over the weekend and noticed an interesting Doctor Who link. Another one? Battle for Canary Wharf. They were opening the rift to produce clean, free, unlimited energy, in inverted commas, in Primeval. Oh. Pardon? Did you say something?
Oh, it sounded like you disappeared for a second. You were just pausing. It was a dramatic pause.
Yes, it was. In Primeval, they're trying to create artificial anomalies to produce clean, free, unlimited energy. And if I remember correctly, in an episode of Sanctuary, Tesla was playing with interdimensional space that another character used to time travel through in hope of, yes, you guessed it, produce clean, free, unlimited energy. Do you think everyone watched the same episode of Doctor Who? Which of those three was broadcast first, of course? Any Adam? Is that what, any Adam, it says. Any Adam. What does that mean? No, I don't live in a house with a Dalek in the window. Maybe it means to say, anyway, Adam.
Yeah.
Anyway, Adam, I don't live in a house with a Dalek in the window. What sort of anorak do you take me for? I live in a house with a Dalek near the window. Kirby, you've got a copy of ITV's Hot Mikado. Where? I used to have that on video, but I can't find it anywhere on DVD. I'm so jealous. Roy Spearman. Now,
I've heard of Hot Mikado. I have never heard it or seen it, but I've heard of it.
All I'm going to say on Primeval, this particular series that they're showing now on ITV1 was shown on Watch quite a long time ago. Don't bother, it is utter tripe. Terrible, terrible series. It's not a very good series anyway, Primeval, but basically they've managed to get through five or six series, I don't know how many, doing the same storylines but in different scenes. It's just basically dinosaur turns up, they shoot at it, run away from it, shoot at it, run away from it, and that's the next episode, where somewhere else a dinosaur turns up, they shoot at it, run away from it, shoot at it, run away from it. It is dire, and I don't know how it's managed to last so many series.
Wasn't there a Third Doctor story where dinosaurs show up and unit shoots at it and they run away? And
yeah, I think you might be right there.
I've never seen all of Invasion of the Dinosaurs. I do own it, but I haven't had a chance to actually sit down and wade through however many episodes it is. A bunch. Six, I think.
Right, now, we're going to have to stay a bit quiet for this bit. I think. Because it's a bit of audio feedback from, what's his name? Oh, Dr. Phil Cerner. Don't know if you've ever heard of him.
Yes, but of course.
You have heard him. That's good then. The trouble is, he's sent the link to the audio feedback online. So the only way I can play it is by playing it through my Skype connection.
Right click, you download it while we talk about something else, and then you play it.
Yeah, my computers are all recording. Could you imagine what they're going to do if they start downloading while recording? I don't think that's going to work somehow. Hang on, I've got an itch.
Oh, and you've got a Mac. You don't know what a right click is.
Don't have a you hold down the Alt button and do it that way.
Remember, I will make fun of Macs.
No, but that's what it's basically the same thing. You just hold down the Alt button and click. But the only problem is it's a WAV file, and it takes quite a long time to download. But I'm going to try and see if I can get it to play. Bear in mind, if it doesn't work, I'll just dub it on afterwards.
What now?
Communication from Watchtower Command. Mistress.
Authorized capsule entry imminent. Stand to on Sector 7.
Greetings,
to Adam and everyone at the 20 Megabyte Podcast. Kirby, Reese, Robert, hopefully you're recovering, as well as Ben. Great to hear you back a couple weeks back. This is Dr. Phil from Adventures in Time, Space, and Music, and I'm in my usual place, which is, well, my car. I'm in between Northern Illinois and Northwest Indiana. And I wanted to send in a little bit of feedback because I don't often, especially on my show, try to keep my negative sentiments about certain Doctor Who score elements to a minimum. But you guys are covering a story that I feel that I can't keep my mouth shut about, which is the Shakespeare Code. While I love the fact that they went through the process of filming at the Globe Theater to get a lot of the very good period costuming, the plotting about Love's Labor, Labor's One is great. The lute song at the beginning of the story is extremely poor, and I was kind of surprised that, considering that you've got late Elizabethan period, you know, you don't have any of its music at all. That we get kind of what we have in, compositionally speaking, like we have Curse of the Black Spot, which is mostly kind of pirate sea shanty music, especially when Martha and the Doctor go to see the performance of Shakespeare at the Globe. It's an element. I mean, besides the kind of, you know, hokey little Harry Potterisms in it, it's fine. It's a story that I don't tend to come back to very often because the musical side of it pains me so much, and I'm not one to whine and complain about much in Doctor Who regarding music. I mean, I'm much more forgiving for the Sea Devils now than when I first watched it when I was a kid. And I find it much more interesting. But I would say that my problems with that element of the score being mostly large symphonic orchestral, since most of those instruments didn't exist for another 300 years and more than that in the forms that they're being played in the soundtrack, is that I would lay less of that blame actually at Murray Gold than I do at the seat of Russell T. Davis. Because I know how much he adored, especially by Series 3 and Series 4, of pushing the envelope of having more and more theatrical and big. And in a way, I think what fails in this story is that it could have been a lot more creative and intimate. You could have had Talis, you could have had Christopher Tye, you could have had Orlando Gibbons, all numbers of great contemporary composers from Elizabethan times. And in fact, if you look at the Shakespeare plays, sorry if I'm rambling, this is my area of dissertation expertise, is the fact that you look at a play like Hamlet and Ophelia's Mad Scene especially, you got so many musical references to Elizabethan era pop tunes, ballad tunes that become drinking songs in all sorts of settings, some of them exceptionally naughty, which most of you would probably enjoy a great deal. I find that that's an element of New Who that I find a little unsettling, is that instead of what you get in a story like The Mask of Mandragora, while a lot of the costumes in that are not particularly authentic, and the fact they use Port Myron is not particularly accurate to the Italian setting either, but it does very well to stand in for Renaissance Italy, is I think that story does better to explore the kind of social worldview that people had than the Shakespeare Code does, which kind of does more like what a lot of modern television does with, say the fad for, say, the Borgias, the Tudors, and even Spartacus that's being produced by companies like HBO and such, is instead of actually giving us a look into how people thought and believed and felt centuries ago, it's more and more often transplanting a modern worldview onto a period setting. And I find that, not that we want all of our Doctor Who to be pedantically educational, but it is really great when you can have that dichotomy between what modern cultural values. I mean, you know, Martha points it out, yes, I mean, wouldn't she be rounded up as a slave? And they kind of throw that away. I think they explore that much better, the ethnic relationships in England, in Human Nature and the Family of Blood, for that period, than they do in Shakespeare Code. And I think it's a shame, because that's, well, especially in New Doctor Who, you get a lot of great social commentary between the weapons, as Toby Haydock points out in Moz Ate My Doctor Who Scarf, of, you know, weapons, you know, massive weapons of destruction in World War III. You have the pollution with the Suntarans in Season 4. you know, I mean, if, you know, of course, I think Human Nature, Family, Blood is a great current underneath that of saying, wasn't the First World War and sending everyone to die in the trenches a great mistake? That's the sort of moral lesson that I think Doctor Who does very well in the new series. And I think, in a way, it's a real missed opportunity to actually have to contrast modern and past social structures and philosophies and learning and art and music, which I would have loved to have seen in Tooth and Claw, you know, a bit of Elgar, you know. And it's not hard for them to license even recordings of those things to include in alongside gold scores. You see that happen in modern films all of the time. Now, I know that, Rhys is a big proponent of Murray Gold, and I don't mean to sound negative about Gold, because I love his scores in Doctor Who a great deal. I think since Series 1, my favorites have been Series 5. But I think, again, it's a failing of the production team, not Mr. Gold in particular, in this particular story. Now, I'll let that go, because I've probably rambled on a bit too long about it. But, guys, keep up the great work, and it's on the 100... Keep up the great work on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Adam, you were exceptionally funny in the last episode. I appreciated every witticism. And of course, Rhys and Kirby, you guys were very enjoyable to listen to as well. Thanks for the very nice shout out. That was very kind. I'm looking forward to when you guys get to Gridlock, because I think, as a contrast, the musical hymn at the end of that story does a lot for adding a great amount of depth. And besides the kind of, I don't know, the superficial use of the 60s monsters and such. It's actually a really good story for Tennant's Doctor, demonstrating kind of his remorse and his missing of Gallifrey. And I think that's the beginning of when, in this series, at least for me, the series gets a lot of depth, because I'm not a big fan of the very lightweight season openers. I love the fun in them. I think that Series 4 is more my favorite, even though I don't particularly like little aliens made of fat, although they're adorable. My wife loved them. But I'm looking forward to, as you get along in this series, because there's some great episodes ahead. So keep up the great work, and sorry for my long ramble. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
I'll drop it in later. But what if he's asking a question?
Well, have you heard it yet? You know.
No. I was going to save it for the show. Hang on, I've got tangled up in me speaker cable. Right. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Hello.
Where would I go? Work?
No, I meant if I can hit. Never mind.
I do have to leave in about 45 minutes. So.
So you're saying we need to get on with the. It's going to be a fairly brief synopsis today. One, because I haven't had time to write any notes down. And two, because you haven't got much time yourself anyway. And three, we haven't got time to watch the whole episode anyway.
What you need to do is fit in there a little bit of a sound clip from Monty Python the Holy Grail. Get on with it!
Yeah, so, charts then. I'll get on with the charts. Okay. Number 30. Do you want to cue the music, or shall I?
Cue the music.
Number 30 is a non-mover for The Oncoming Storm. Number 29, a non-mover for The Sonic Toolbox. Number 28, re-entry for Earth Station 1. And I am differentiating them between Earth Station Who now and Earth Station 1. And that's the case, that's why they... Oh, never mind. Number 27, non-mover for The Cultum Collective. Number 26, a re-entry for Dirty Hooers. 25, a re-entry for Articles of the Shadow Proclamation. 24, re-entry for Outpost Scarrow. And 23, up one, Travelling the Vortex. 22, up one, The Blue Box Podcast. 21, up one, Tim's Take On. And at number 20, a re-entry for the Ha! Penis Patrol. And 19 is a re-entry for Bigger on the Inside. Number 18, up three, Staggering Stories. And 17, a re-entry for 2 Minute Time Lord. Number 16, up four, One Man and His TARDIS. 15, new entry, The Big Finish Podcast.
Hooray.
Number 14, up 11, A Mad Man with a Box. Up 11. Don't quite know how that happened. Number 13, a re-entry for Who on Who, and number 12 up 3 for Doctor Who, Who's He?
I don't know. Who is he?
Anyway, number 11, and a non-mover for the Pharos Project. And moving into the big top 10, number 10, re-entry for Omega Podcast. Number 9, up 1, 20 megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Never heard of it.
No. Number 8, re-entry, The TARDIS Tavern. Number 7, a re-entry, Adventures in Time, Space and Music.
Yay!
And number 6, up 1, The Memory Cheats. Number 5, non-mover, Impossible Podcasts. Number 4, non-mover, The DWO WhoCast. Number 3, a non-mover, Tin Dog Podcast. And number 2, down 1, for the Doctor Who Podcast. And number 1, up 1, Radio Free Scaro.
So some of those in the top 5, they just all
what?
Move around and kind of dance around each other.
Not much so, but yes, but quite pleased to still be in the top 10. The last thing we're going to do before we move on to the show, as in the show being the Shakespeare Code, is our sponsors are whoone.co.uk. They've got a special offer on their website at the moment. The Eye of the Giant, Goth Opera, Lucifer Rising, Return of the Living Dad and Twilight of God's Book. It's a paperback, $24.99. Basically, it's a set of books. So that's quite good. They take PayPal now as well. Doctor Who Magazine 448, Yellow Dalek Soft Toy, which I should really get because it's Isabella's favourite colour. What else we got? Coming Soon. I click on that. Androids of Tara book. Nope, CD. I should get my facts right and read what's in front of me instead of just announcing stuff. Aztec CD, Butcher of Brisbane, Big Finish, and Companion Chronicles 6.12, Rings of Icaria. And dog barking in room, very annoying.
Shut up!
Hello.
What do you mean, hello?
Shut up!
Will you be quiet?
So this says Aztecs on CD. Is that the Aztecs is one which is available?
Is it an
audiobook?
Might be an audiobook. 240 minutes long. He's growling.
Yeah, I see that.
Anyway, so that's there's loads of other stuff available, obviously, on whoone.co.uk. I'm just outlining the newer items. Have a look at their website where you'll see our logo, our sponsors, whoone.co.uk. From the Isle of Wight, listeners.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
Yeah, and they accept PayPal, MasterCard, SagePay, Visa, Maestro. I can't read that logo. And
I can't imagine how much it would cost for me to get anything from them shipped over here.
Yeah, but it's worth it to be guaranteed that you get buying something from a Doctor Who fan. Okay, then. You've got me now. I think we'll go for a certain Doctor Who story that we should be talking about called The Shakespeare Code Without Notes. So this is a little bit going to be a little bit like The Memory Cheats, only I've only just watched it. Right, now, as far as I can remember, it starts off with a little bit of a footage with a very pretty lady flirting with this bloke and then suddenly turning into a witch and killing him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Christina Cole, the actress who plays Lilith, was on the commentary along with David Tennant.
Oh, was she? Oh, I didn't get a chance to listen to the commentary.
I listened to about half of it last night, and I ended up falling asleep, not because they were boring, but because it was like 1 in the morning, and I had to get up 3.5 hours later, so...
Oh, right. Oh, dear, I think I've just clicked on play VVD. That's all right. Oh, my God, sorry.
I've got it playing in the background, but I've got it muted.
Sorry, I've got to click the mute button. There we go. I was mute. Yeah, you got it playing in the background, but what?
But I've got it muted.
Yes, but unfortunately I didn't have it muted before I started playing it in the background. So that, yes, I said I wasn't going to do this, didn't I? Yes, but it's just going to help me along a little bit with what I'm trying to talk about.
Yeah, we do not have time for a commentary, so.
No, I'm just skipping through. We never have time for a commentary, really, do we? Not unless we want to do the...
Yeah, a couple of times.
Go down the bigger on the inside... 6-hour podcast route, which you haven't got time for you're going to work. Basically, if the next clip is having a bit of a rocky ride in the TARDIS, the Doctor has actually literally mounted the console, which looks a bit rude in some ways. And Martha looks rather fetching in the little vesty top she's got. And then they suddenly are in Elizabethan Where are they? London? It's not London, is it? Yeah, it is, because it's a Globe Theatre. Yeah, it's Elizabethan London.
Specifically, yeah. They are filming in Coventry and Warwick.
Are they? Not in Wales, then?
Just a little bit in Wales, but apparently this Elizabethan street that they're in is in Greyfriars Lane, Coventry, according to DoctorWhoLocations.net.
Okay.
And then, of course, the interior scenes of the Globe are in the Globe.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, talking about where they are now, of course, it is very... It does give off the essence of the Elizabethan. So they've done a really, really good job with this set. And, of course, with the toilet being chucked out the window, reminds me a little bit of Blackadder, which obviously is set in the same time period. But, of course, Martha hasn't noticed what would be the very foul stench that would have been around at that time as well. The fact that people throw their toilet out into the actual street below. But I'm sure at the time there must have been people that would go around and scoop it up into various things rather than just leave it festering in the street. Or maybe not. I would imagine there would be, though. There would probably be like peasants around that would have to... Oh, never mind. I'm rambling. So then we move on to the Globe Theatre, where there's a... Basically, because he wants to show off and show Martha William Shakespeare, so they go off to the Globe to see a Shakespeare play in action. And Martha is rather impressed by this, but at this stage, Martha is rather easily impressed. And then, of course, Shakespeare with a full head of hair turns up. They do explain why, in all his portraits, he hasn't got a full head of hair later on in the episode.
Right.
I must admit, when watching this, I do like the actor that plays Shakespeare, but it didn't really come across very Shakespeare-ish to me. It didn't convince me that he was actually Shakespeare. I can't imagine Shakespeare being that sort of persona. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Oh, he's going to be providing he's voicing the role of John Lennon for the upcoming 3D remake of The Yellow Submarine.
That doesn't surprise me. Because, I mean, he is a Northern actor, isn't he? Doesn't surprise me he's going to do that. And he's a very, very good actor. But for me, I couldn't really get him in my mind as William Shakespeare. But it didn't matter.
Right, I agree. By the way, the scenes inside the Globe, they didn't actually have that many extras. They used their old business of duplicating the extras into the various stalls around.
Okay, so do we get to see the same faces over and over again if you look close enough?
Yeah, if you look close enough.
Yeah. So anyway, the actress that plays the main witch, you know, absolutely beautiful. She isn't when she's got a makeup on, but obviously she is when she's, you know, being human. What was her name again?
What was her name? It is Christina Cole.
Yeah, very pretty.
And she was saying that she liked the being a witch better than being in all those clothes in that particular scene there in the Globe.
That surprised me. It must take ages putting the witch makeup on. Right.
And she says she kept the teeth.
Oh, did she?
she hauls them out for parties.
So later on, Shakespeare and his little band of friends are relaxing with a tankard each, and she's like a maid there, I think. And the Doctor and Martha turn up, and he's sort of saying something on the line of no autographs, no, I'm not going to have my portrait sketched with you, etc. Which was quite sort of trying to link the two times together, isn't it, really? And he takes an immediate shine to Martha. But there's quite a lot of racial elements to this particular episode, sort of very sort of mild, but obviously in fact, in this series, there's a lot of how an African lady might be perceived at certain time periods.
Yeah.
Which is all right, but I seem to remember, if you watch Merlin, there are African characters that aren't actually African characters, you know what I mean? They're just playing characters in a drama,
right?
And they're not even referred to as being African. They just play their parts, and that's that. I didn't think it was entirely necessary to make a point after the fact that she was an African sort of descended character.
I think the show was still kind of, they were noticing the fact that this was the first companion.
I don't know. I'm not offended. I didn't get me wrong. I'm not offended by it at all. I can perfectly understand why they've done it. Because in a lot of dramas that BBC are doing, set in the past, where they just have African actors or, you know, ethnic actors in it playing a part, I didn't think that it was necessary because they've done that in other BBC dramas.
Right, and they did make when the Doctor was walking down the street, they did make a reference to the fact that she shouldn't be worried about.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yes. And that's fine. I mean, I'm just saying that wasn't really necessary to per se. And, of course, later on in the series, they do it again in the Family of Blood episode.
Right.
Where she's playing a... Doesn't matter, anyway. We'll move on from that.
Well, that part I thought was necessary for that plot.
No, that's fine. I'm not offended by it. It doesn't bother me.
Oh, in this scene in the scene where they're meeting with Shakespeare at first, there's a repeat of a joke that was in the year before in Tooth and Claw.
Yeah.
Where, in this case, Martha starts, she says things like, "Verily, forsooth, egads."
Yeah, I do like that.
Turns to her and goes, No, don't do that.
I've moved on a little bit from there to the bit where, obviously, in that same scene, I think Shakespeare is told that he's not allowed to put on the play, or has he got to do it? I can't remember. He has an argument with whoever his boss is, basically. So the witches then decide to voodoo him to death.
But did you notice there was Shakespeare cannot is not affected by the psychic paper?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, I forgot about that. But well done. Just testing. Yes, this is what you're here for, obviously. Yes, he wasn't affected by it. Interesting. But then that's just, Doctor just passes it off of him being a genius. Meanwhile, the bloke who looks a bit like Henry VIII starts then spitting up loads of water and looked like he was throwing up water and eventually drowns spontaneously.
Yeah, in the commentary they were commenting over how that was a practical effect with a tube coming up to just below his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he has the big beard.
Ah, right.
To hide the tube.
Oh, that's clever. I didn't know that. That's a really good bit for me. But anyway, it was a really good effect. Of course, then eventually he dies of heart failure, despite two doctors trying to save him.
He drowned.
Yeah. But no, they finished him off with heart failure, didn't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right, because she stabs the little voodoo doll.
Yeah. Doctor's now taking the situation quite seriously, and that someone's died in a very weird way. There's obviously a candle in a skull, which you see in the foreground. Which was reminding me a little bit of the...
Oh, every time the Carrionites speak, they're always rhyming.
They're always what?
Rhyming.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool.
Yeah. Clever. I mean, the writing, I mean, the dialogue in this story is really, really good as far as, you know, what the characters are saying. I mean, it's excellent dialogue in this. Then we get to the bit where the Doctor and Martha, go to bed together, and Martha's looks like she's up for it. And the Doctor sort of then starts talking to her about Rose and that. And yes, I think she gets the picture at that particular point.
Yes.
Then there's a bit where Shakespeare's sort of, he's writing, and then they sort of put some green stuff up his nose and he passes out. And then they sort of do some, like, it's automatic writing. They use this puppet thing to make him sit up. And they
right,
actually
the puppet,
write.
The puppet was actually being manipulated by the actress who plays Lilith.
Brilliantly. Yeah. But, so that was quite. I mean, the concept of this story is actually very, very good. They thought it through very well, you know, having words as a weapon and making it feasible to a certain degree within the boundaries of Doctor Who does work really, really well. You know, a species that the words are really powerful things. I quite like that aspect of it. So obviously he's written Love's... what's it called again? The play he's written?
Love's... Sequel to Love's Labour's Lost.
Love's Labour's
One.
Yeah. Or you, if it, I thought which, it would have been called
there,
Luck.
There is the possibility that that was really a play.
Yeah.
And it is gone, or we know it as a different name.
Yeah.
There's a debate among Shakespearean scholars.
But it could also have been called Love's Labour's Found. Make sense? No? Okay. Also, the Doctor's sort of acting in this story like this is the first time he's met Shakespeare, when, of course, in City of Death, you talked about the fact that he wrote some of, because he had a bad wrist or something like that, he wrote some of Shakespeare's manuscripts.
He's also, Shakespeare is seen by the Doctor on the screen of the time-space visualizer in the chase.
Yeah.
And apparently there's a reference in Planet of Evil as well. Oh, yes, he helped, in City of Death, he claims he helped transcribe the original manuscript of Hamlet.
Uh-huh.
And in Mark of the Rani, Sixth Doctor says, I must see him again sometime.
Okay. Meanwhile, at the Globe...
That's right, Mark of the Rani isn't Mark of the Rani the one... Okay, no, that's the first of the Rani ones. That's right.
It is, yes. There's,
I was thinking for a minute that Shakespeare was one of the geniuses that the Rani was trying to get for Time of the Rani. But
yes.
No, that was... No. That was
I knew what you were on about. Don't
Einstein
worry.
And who else? Never mind.
Never mind. Meanwhile, at the Globe Theatre, the actors are sort of contemplating doing some rehearsals where a strange veiled creature looks a bit like a Dementor from Harry Potter. And they say, well, we should never speak of this again, otherwise we'll end up in Bedlam, which coincidentally is where the Doctor, Martha and Shakespeare have gone to see the owner of the Globe, is it?
Who is that guy? I don't quite remember.
Is he the bloke who built the Globe or something like that?
Yeah, he was the architect.
The architect, that's right.
He apparently he had been instructed by the witches. Yeah, now you bring it all back. He had been instructed by the witches to make it the certain number of sides, etc.
That's right. Yeah, because it all to do with the mathematicalness and. And because the Doctor does say about some people use mathematics, and when he explains away magic, that it's just another form of something, you know, to do with words and stuff.
Yeah.
Again, this is lots of tributes to J.K. Rowling, probably because they wanted to use things that were in the Harry Potter things
yeah.
without getting into trouble. So
particularly
they
at the end when he goes Expelliarmus.
Yeah.
And there's, of course, David Tennant himself is a reference
Yeah, I didn't thought of that one, actually. Brilliant. So basically the witches are watching what's going on through their little crystal thing and realise the Doctor sort of needs to be sort of stopped. So they send, I suppose she apparates this witch and then kills him with a touch of a finger on his chest. And now they're trapped in, because I like the bit where...
That crystal ball, that the Carrionites are trapped in at the end, you can see it in The Unicorn and the Wasp.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, thank you for that. I never knew that.
It's, I believe, when the Doctor's going after the Agatha Christie book, he's going through that stuff, it's in there.
Oh, I never knew that. But there's... I thought actually the mask on the actress in this scene didn't look... like it was stuck on properly, but no, that's just me being over.
Yeah, that's the two older witches don't quite look right with the masks.
So I love the bit where the Martha sort of says, let me out, and he says, there's no point in doing that, everybody's shouting that in there, which is quite good.
Yeah.
And then the Doctor realises who they are and uses the witch's name to make her disappear, which is, again, good stuff. Hang on, my thing is going at the wrong speed now. So, did that witch get killed, or did she just get transported back to her companion?
Just transported back.
Ah, right, okay.
Because in the next scene, you see all three of them together.
Yeah, I thought so. I wasn't quite 100% sure.
There's only three.
So then, of course, it's time for the play, which Shakespeare...
Lilith, Doomfinger, and Bloodtide.
Doesn't actually realise that he's actually written. Yeah, this point I started losing it a little bit. I seem to remember that Shakespeare, that Doctor tells Shakespeare what's going on, so he goes along and then coaches him into using his own words to to sort of get rid of the witches. This is a point I seem to remember at the time that people thought was a bit far-fetched. But, of course, they use a voodoo doll to knock him out, don't they? Initially. What are they actually trying to do here, these witches, with this play? I never really got my head around it.
They're trying to... what is they're exactly trying to do? They want to get... Oh, they want to release the rest of the Carrionites who are trapped.
So how does the play help them do that?
It's the power of words. The way that things are set up opens a portal from where the Carrionites are.
Right. Okay. Meanwhile, the Doctor... The Doctor mentions Back to the Future and Marty McFly, which is, again, a nice little tribute. Lots of tributes to other time-travelling programmes and films in this particular story. Oh, no, sorry, magic and time... Oh, shut up, Adam. Right, yeah, sorry, yeah, but obviously they've made a passing tribute to Harry Potter now, to Back to the Future. So, obviously, the writer is a fan of both. Who wrote this one again?
Gareth Roberts.
Yeah, must be a fan of both. Mind you, I'm a fan of Back to the Future and Harry Potter, so he's a bit like me. Maybe I should write some Doctor Who. Or I'll rephrase that. Maybe I should write some more Doctor Who. Because obviously I've already written a Doctor Who.
The Doctor deduces the Carrionites intend to use the powerful words of Love's Labour's One to break their species out of an eternal imprisonment.
Oh, cool.
Okay. So I guess it's not eternal.
Of course, the Doctor's quite happy for the witch to touch his chest to sort of knock his heart out of action, bearing in mind he's got another one.
Yes.
I thought that was happening at the time I watched it. I thought, well, they're bound to only stop one of his hearts. And Dr. Martin...
Yeah, the first time I saw this one, I wasn't quite sure I liked it. I mean, you get to that one point right after the Bedlam scene where it starts getting all wonky with the Shakespeare references and everything, and I didn't like it, and then I went back and watched it again and I liked it, and I go back and forth with this one. Just depends.
It's okay. Yeah. It's okay. It's a sort of run of the mill, slightly better than average but not brilliant, if you know what I mean, Doctor Who story.
Yes.
Of course, and also the light-hearted moments are quite funny as well, and like I say, the dialogue is excellent. Of course, we just had the scene where Martha starts up the Doctor's heart by punching him on the wrong side of the chest, which was quite funny. And they race to the globe to get Shakespeare back on his feet, because all the magic's starting to happen now, and all the Dementors or whatever they are, sorry, that's Harry Potter, isn't it?
Yeah.
Start floating around, and basically loads of magic in there. And they do look like Dementors, don't they? And
yes, they do.
Yeah, so basically I think they get Shakespeare up and running. He says a few words that he thinks up on the spot and helps. I think the Doctor does help with a couple of lines, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
And that's it. Lots of screaming from the witches and then great applause from the audience, who seem to think it's special effects. And of course it was special effects done by the Mill, so... It's nice to see the Mill getting a bit.
People would have never seen special effects that good.
but of course, none of them would be alive now to talk about it. And of course, they take their final bows, and the witches are trapped within a crystal ball thing. Now, what does Doctor do with that then?
He puts it in the TARDIS, like I said.
You did?
Yes.
What does he do with it after he's put it in the TARDIS?
He just has it sitting around, and he picks it up. I remember now, he picks it up and looks at it when he's looking for... Ooh, why have we got some interference here?
I can't hear any interference.
Okay. I was getting one of those little buzzing things when the cell phone...
Oh, no, it's not my end. But I can't hear it. I mean, I should be there. Because I'm listening to the live feed.
In the Agatha Christie story, when he's looking for... the book in the TARDIS, the Agatha Christie book.
Yep.
He happens to pick up that crystal ball.
Ah, okay. I'll look out for that then, because I never would have spotted that from previous and from now. So
I remember spotting it when I saw
the
Agatha Christie one, and then of course that's confirmed by Wikipedia.
wow, that's obviously true then. So that's basically then. After that, Shakespeare does a bit of flirting with Martha, and this is where you get reference to him having quite smelly breath. And then
who shows up?
Tell me.
What, didn't you... You haven't seen this? Queen Elizabeth?
I want to give you the benefit of... Yeah, Queen Elizabeth turns up, but of course, this is where the reference... Because he says, I don't know, it's the first time I've met her. So obviously later on he does something to her, and I think we get the implication of in the end of time he marries her.
Yes.
So at least they did very slightly tie up that particular loose end.
And she's played by Angela Pleasant.
I mean, how can an actress of that caliber come on and do such a small cameo? Because she's a pretty proper famous actress from way back, you know.
Daughter of actor Donald Pleasance,
yes, indeed. But yeah, are coming on just to play the tiniest scene. But I suppose that's just.
It's a fun one.
Oh yeah, it's brilliant. But isn't the 11th Doctor? I'm pretty sure there's a reference between him and Elizabeth I as well.
Yes,
somewhere along the line.
I'm trying to remember where it is. I wonder if the TARDIS, when it travels at the end of this, if the arrow just burns off.
Yes. Well, probably not. If you think the third to last episode of this series, which is called Utopia, which in one of the books I've got is counted as a three-part story, Utopia, and Last of Time.
Yeah, I consider the end of this series to be a three-part.
Very much so.
Utopia is definitely part of it.
But Captain Jack clings onto the TARDIS, all he does is just die. He doesn't actually burn off whilst the TARDIS is travelling through the vortex. So, yes, it's a shame that the arrow wasn't still on it when they materialised at the beginning of the next story, but I don't believe it was. And that was supposed to be Martha's only trip in the TARDIS.
Yes.
And as we'll find out in the next episode, it wasn't. Now, the next episode is Gridlock. And I seem to remember this having some particularly good music to gloss over some parts that were a little bit boring. But I'll have to see if I'm right.
I like Gridlock. I haven't seen it in about 6 months, but it's one of my favorites. It's a really good one.
I'll watch it and I'll reassess it, because I seem to remember it having quite a lot of sitting around inside capsules, and just talking and lots of choirs singing and stuff. Like I say, the music was beautiful, so I look forward to that side of it. And of course, we get Face of Bo in that episode as well. So that's next week. But anyway, just to sum up, I think we've already said during the review that Shakespeare Code is slightly better than the average, but not brilliant. But it's okay. It's enjoyable, light-hearted again. And we've had two light-hearted stories so far this series.
Yeah.
Did you say that you remember not liking it and then liking it a bit and then you sort of...
I go back and forth with it.
Yeah, so it really depends what mood you're in, really.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Same
it's
here,
not
I suppose.
One that I will necessarily watch just because, I feel like getting the DVD out and watching.
No, that's exactly what I was thinking.
I'm more likely to watch it because I get the DVD out and I'm wanting to watch either Smith and Jones or Gridlock.
Yeah. I have to say that you're right there. I wouldn't particularly pick it out as a story I would watch on its own. There are other Doctor Who stories I would do that with. That is not one of them. But as I say, I did enjoy watching it as part of this series, as I will do next week with Gridlock. So that's really, really good. I'm just before we finish up, because I think we've done quite well this week, right? Even though we've been quite brief, we actually have covered most of the things we needed to cover.
Oh dear!
Apart
I just
apart from the audio commentary,
go ahead.
What?
Go ahead. I just
Yeah.
I just know it's what we're going to have to put up with after Gridlock. No!
Oh, dear. No, I seem to remember you saying that about a story from last year and then actually quite enjoyed.
Oh, I'm speaking of Daleks in Manhattan and Evolution of the Daleks.
Yeah, it would be all right if it was a one-parter. Anyway, but we'll get around to that at the time. But again, good performances in that story, as we said.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's I'm just looking down Twitter to see if anything's coming through on the hashtag Doctor Who. And actually, no, I'm not even doing that. I'm doing it wrong. I'll type in hashtag Doctor Who. How do you do hashes on Max again?
I don't know.
Alt-3.
I would attach a keyboard that has...
Has got a keyboard. I mean a keyboard that's got a hash, hashtag on it. But actually, if you press the right buttons, it has got a hash on it. Yeah, what's going on? Doctor Who Jigsaw, River and the Doctor. Apparently there's a thing on Who News. So you really need to on to Who News about that. Paul McGann has reunited with his Doctor Who costume after 17 years at Gallifrey 1 2012. So that's obviously the forthcoming Gallifrey con that I can't go to ever unless I win the lottery. There's a Twitter picture on there. Shall I have a look? I'm quite curious. I know this is a podcast, but oh, it's a very poor picture. Someone has taken with their mobile phone. But you can see a side view of Paul McGann wearing said costume. How do I get that closed down? Oh, I see like that. Okay. What else we got here? Doctor Who must hold the record for having had the most spin-offs, especially if you include all the audios. Wonder what second would be, says Craig Hansen, Mr. Chin, on Twitter. He's saying quite a lot of things, actually. David Collings would have been a good Doctor Who. Who's David Collings? No? Okay.
I don't know.
Karen Killen describes her Doctor Who exit as bittersweet. And so she's excited about filming. And that was posted on the 16th of June via whovian.net. What else we got here? First three, William Hartnell, Patrick Troughton, and best of all, John Pertwee, apparently, according to Patrick Troughton, the best Doctor Who. That's not Patrick Troughton, the person, that's somebody called Patrick Troughton on Twitter. Oh, talking about Twitter and Facebook, I got a message coming through on my Facebook account that said, your friend request to Peter Davison has been accepted. Now, I thought, oh, that's nice. I'm not highly convinced it's the real Peter Davison, namely because it says that he's an actress on it. So, but I mean, clearly a Doctor Who fan, and I'm quite happy to go along with that. I mean, I used to be on Facebook as just the Doctor, and then that account got closed down. Thanks, Facebook. Let's have a look. It says Peter Davison real in brackets. Yeah, cool. That's obviously going to be enough to mean it's actually real. Sorry, Peter, if it is you. But it does say works as actress. I'm not going to say any other details just in case it is the real him. And he became friends with Dave Simon. Oh, maybe it is the real him, because Dave's met the real Peter Davison. Oops.
Now, there's a Peter Davison listed as real.
Yeah. And there's a picture of him. His profile picture is him with Georgia Moffat.
Which would fit, saying that that's his daughter.
Well, cool. But also, he's friends with Dave Simon, who is my friend from the Who shop in Blackpool, who met all five Doctors and had his picture taken with them, as I alluded to in a previous episode of this show. And he might have got quite friendly with Dave and said, okay, I'll add you as a friend on Facebook. He hasn't got that many friends on there, to be honest with you. 330. That's gone up from this morning. It was 160 this morning. 13 mutual.
Maybe he's just discovered.
Hang on. It was six mutual friends this morning. He must have just jumped on and just accepted loads of friend requests. How interesting. But yeah. Hello, Peter, just in case it is you, and just in case in the unlikely event you might be listening to this podcast. Yeah.
I over the weekend, I dug out the video that, what's his name? Mark Gatiss and the other guy made during the gap years where they kidnapped Peter Davison.
Yes.
And the girls watched that and were amused. They hadn't seen it in several years.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in several years myself, but I must get around to watch it sometime. But it is very, very good. Very, very funny. And what a top sport Peter Davison was to actually do that.
Yes. Right. The other guy who was in it played that mole character in last series. The one in the hotel.
Yeah.
Sorry, David. What's it?
Walliams? David Walliams, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, I should have helped you out a bit earlier with that one, shouldn't I? Before I go, there's one thing I did mention earlier on in the show that I did make it known on Twitter that I'm looking for a female regular co-host on the show. Now, there is, I did get a reply from some bloke who knows someone who might be interested, sort of thing. And I did meet a lady at a party, not a party, sorry, at a wedding the other day. Neither of them have come back to me, so it is open. Alicia seems to think I'm getting someone on to replace her. That's not the case. It would be an additional person to the show. And I just feel that this show was set up to have a female voice, and I would like that to be the case. So if you're interested in Doctor Who or interested in podcasting, not on a podcast or still or currently on a podcast, and want to become a regular contributor to this show, please let me know. You can do so by email at 20mb.feedback@gmail.com, where you can also send your feedback. You might want to send an audio of your voice. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Wish we could get Mary Lang on.
I would love to get Mary Lang on, but I think Mary Lang would have already have guessed at getting up at ridiculously early hours of the morning to do podcasting. Well, she might do it. Mary, you're invited. Yeah, she's got a great voice.
It's
she?
Only 4:30 in the morning.
She'd
that
be
you have
perfect.
To get up.
She'd be perfect. But yeah, so if you're interested, obviously Twitter, Adam20MB Podcast, our Facebook group, which is the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast. And of course, email 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. Please do so. We really want to hear a nice dulcet female voice in this show, don't we, Kirby? No,
yes.
Okay, fair enough. yeah, so hopefully that'll come to fruition somewhere along the line. Obviously, the most ideal thing for me would be if Lottie decides to come on the show because she lives locally. So it would be quite easy to get her on. And
in some ways, there's another person on the Isle of Wight who knows what Dr. Who is?
Yeah, and a woman too, and a woman who's actually quite nice looking as well. So, but that obviously doesn't count for anything because she's about half my age, and I'm married and very much in love with the person who I'm married to. But anyway, yes. So that's about it for this week. Of course, next week Gridlock, which will probably be topical. The post person's just posting something through the letterbox because there'll be quite a lot of gridlock on the Isle of Wight because of the
but
Isle of
the
Wight
postman
festival.
Postman had been by earlier.
No, that was a deliverer of what they've been delivering, junk mail. However, there's a parcel just dropped through the letterbox. I'm intrigued to see what's in it. Bear with me just a moment.
Okay.
Oh, and I've just trodden on my headphone cable, and I've got to cut the dog's dinners. Hang on, I'm just trying to untangle myself. Bear with me a moment. I wonder if I can get the cable to stretch over there. No. It's got the name Alicia Pearson on it.
Oh.
So obviously, because listeners, on the 22nd of June, which is in a couple of days' time as we speak, Alicia will be 15 years old. And no doubt this is for her. And it's sent for, oh no, it's not a birthday present. She won't be happy. It's an orthodontic laboratory. So it's obviously a new a new retainer for a teeth. So she'll get all excited now. She'll see this parcel thinking, oh, good, I've got a present to open up I didn't know I was going to get. And no, it's not a present at all. So I'll open that one up myself because she won't be interested in it. Anyway, like I say, next week's gridlock and hopefully some applications for our female vacancy. And until then, thank you, Kirby, for coming on and helping me out. Otherwise, I would have had to have done this on my own.
No problem.
And hopefully we'll have Robert back next week and Reese.
Good.
Yes. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is the trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.